I have no problem of inspiration, you know, there are so many stories I could tell. After is, am I sure it's the right story I want to work on during 2 years? That's my problem, to fix my desire. But I need to really finish a film to know exactly what would be the next one.
Legendary French filmmaker François Ozon, as the creative force behind such films as Swimming Pool, Eight Women, and Young and Beautiful, Ozon has become one of the most respected and versatile voices of the modern screen. In this special extended interview, the director shares his insights on filmmaking, his cinematic inspirations, and the one film that changed the way he saw the art of making movies.
Would I have done it better or not? But now I'm bored with bad movies, so I try to see just good movies. But sometimes, you know, the critics say it's a masterpiece and it's not a masterpiece. And I don't have the patience to see bad movies anymore.
That's director François Ozon in this special extended interview right here on The Cinema Show. It's the year 1919. A young German woman, Anna, is deep in mourning following the death of her fiancé during the First World War. One day, when visiting his grave, she's shocked to find a young man whom she doesn't recognise. He confides to her that he knew her fiancé, Franz, and the pair strike up a friendship.
Wie alt sind Sie?
24.
Franz wäre im Februar 24 geworden.
Sie sprechen gut Deutsch.
Es geht.
Und Sie kannten Franz?
Ja.
Aus Frankreich?
Ja.
Was auf seiner letzten Reise?
Soon, however, it becomes painfully clear that the mysterious young man comes with a backstory that will inevitably hurt Anna, but will also cast a whole new light on the conflict around them. This is The Cinema Show on Monocle 24. I'm Ben Rylan. French director François Ozon is one of Europe's most prolific voices of the cinema. He's often considered the Woody Allen of France, sometimes due to the sheer volume of his output, but also because he seems to effortlessly inject an auteur quality into his films. With a career spinning partnerships with cinematic greats including Catherine Deneuve, Charlotte Rampling, and Isabelle Huppert, to name a few, Ozon has truly achieved a legendary status. His latest film, France, departs from the colourful melodrama, bright comedy, and cool visuals of some of his other films in favour of a more restrained approach, much of it in black and white. I sat down with Ozon the day after his native France had voted in an election that many feared might bring victory to the far right. Mercifully, the nation avoided such a fate. Parallels with Europe's current political reality were never part of Ozon's intent, and the irony of a film about secrets and lies of Europe's wartime past resonating with today's politics surprised even the filmmaker himself.
I don't know what people are expecting from me, but each time I try to experiment something new and to have some new challenge. And in the case of this film, it was very challenging because the film was in black and white. One big part of the film was in German, and it was a period movie. I had many challenges, but at the same time, I had the feeling it was something very important for me because it was a film about secrets and lies. And for a long time, I wanted to make a film about that.
One of your best-known films, Eight Women, was also very much about secrets and lies.
There were some lies and secrets in Eight Women, but it was a comedy, it was totally different genre. In the case of this film, it was important to develop a context, historical context, which is very important and which helps you to understand better the reasons of lies. And for me, it was very important to develop that. I didn't know first it would be so important. In a certain way, I didn't know the film will become political because of the context of today. I didn't realize the audience could make so many connections with what happens in Europe, in France. I didn't know the Brexit will happen. I didn't know Trump will be elected. Of course, I knew that the rise of nationalism in France was important. So I had that in mind. But I didn't know that the audience could make so many connections with today, and I think that's one of the reasons of the success of the film in France and in Germany. The film touched young people who actually didn't care of the Second World War, but they saw some resonances with today.
It's interesting that we're talking about this on the day after France has just had its election, and I'm sure we're both quite happy that nationalism didn't actually defeat and conquer. You have actually looked to the past in order to get this story. Mm-hmm. It's a reworking of a piece by Ernst Lubitsch. Mm-hmm. Does it surprise you that you can look to the past, you get your source material from something from generations ago, rework it and make it mm-hmm. today, and yet it still feels so contemporary, it still mm-hmm. feels so of its time?
It's great when you see your film can touch people, you know, because I remember when I present my first script to my producer, they were very nervous. They were not very enthusiastic because they said to me, a film again about the First World War. The people are bored of this kind of movie, especially in France. But I convinced them saying, I think the point of view of the film is original because as a French director, I will make the film from the point of view of the loser of the war, from the German. So it will be interesting for once to see the story on the other side of the border. And they try to convince me to change all the story, to begin the film in France, and the girl is French and the boy is German, and to change all the logic of what I wanted to make. But I had the feeling it was not the right thing to make. It was important for me to pay a kind of tribute as a French director to the German culture and to show that these two countries were friends, could be friends, and the culture of Germany was important for the French and the French culture for the German. So I wanted to play with all these conceptions of culture and the friendship between the two countries.
Swiftly exploiting successes, three American divisions smash into the battered heart of Cologne. The ancient cathedral looks down through blind, staring eyes upon a great city torn to shreds, smashed into ruins.
You're a French director who's worked primarily telling stories within your own country. How did you feel stepping into another country and telling a story perhaps outside of your ordinary comfort zone?
It was exciting, actually, to shoot in Germany and in German because the German language is a language I really enjoy. It was my first language at school. I'm better speaking in German than in English. And Germany was the first country I discovered as a child. So I have a kind of miraculous memories about Germany. And I had some very good friends in Germany when I was young. So, and my father had a friend, and we went very often to his family when we were young. So for me, it was important, especially because usually the German in French movies are always the bad guys. You know, they always play the Nazi. And for once, I wanted to make a film about nice people in Germany. And that's why the Germans were so enthusiastic to co-produce the film, because it's a co-production between France and Germany. It's a total European movie. They were more excited about the story than the French, because for once, they were the nice people of the story.
Wie alt sind Sie?
24.
Franz wäre im Februar 24 geworden.
Sie sprechen gut Deutsch.
Es geht.
Und Sie kannten Franz?
Ja.
You have quite a talent for creating roles for women that feel so authentic. Then they're never straightforward, they're never tokenistic. They always feel so worthwhile. How do you do that?
I don't know. I love women and I love women in movies. So I try to show them in the best way. I think for me it's easier to make films with a female character because I'm more lucid about them, I have more distance. It's more difficult when it's a man because I have the feeling it's too intimate. I have the feeling to have a mirror in front of me, and I prefer to keep a kind of distance. And at the same time, I think very often the actresses are more clever than the actors. They are able to take more risk and they are not afraid of complexity and of ambiguity.
Chère vieille maison.
Papa n'est pas encore réveillé à cette heure-là?
Il a dû travailler très tard hier dans sa chambre.
Quand devrais-je madame réveiller monsieur?
Oh, pas tout de suite.
I think one of the most important with an actress was Charles Rampling. Who was very important in my career when we met Under the Sun. I didn't know her. Under the Sun was a very personal movie. It was a film already about mourning. And we shot the film in two times. You know, the story was not totally written. And I shot the first 20 minutes with Charlotte. And I realized working with her was so strong. We had such a strong connection. I realized the film will become a documentary about Charlotte Rampling, you know. I didn't care of the script. Just film her face, to be in front of her was strong enough. It was the story of the film. And I realized I could, through Charlotte Rampling, tell very intimate things. I was a young man of 30 years old, and she was a woman of 50 years old. But I had the feeling to have found the perfect person to tell very intimate and personal things. So it was a very strong discovery for me to project myself in a woman of another age, and especially in a great actress like Charlotte.
I'm following a path where I refuse to suffer all my life of the same things, and I want to be an independent person so that I can choose how to live my life.
Talk to me about your relationship with your actors then, because a lot of filmmakers, obviously everyone has a different relationship yes. with the people they work with. How does it work for you when you're in the initial stages of planning a film? How important is it that you get to know people and you spend time with them?
I try to be very honest, you know. I want to work in trust. I don't want to manipulate the actors. I want to be very... Yes, honest, I tell the truth, especially when we have difficult scenes. I explain. We need to have a lot of talk about the script of my mise-en-scène, what I want to show, what I don't want to show. And I think you have to adapt yourself to each actor because each one has different needs. You know, I discovered that when I made a film like Eight Women because I had in front of me eight stars. And you don't direct Catherine Deneuve like you direct Isabelle Huppert or Fanny Ardant. So each one has her needs. So some actress want some psychological explanation. Some other just want to know where will be the camera and the place of the camera and what you want to make technically. So you have to adapt to each one. And the idea is just to be open to them and to help them to be the best in the film.
You spend every day with Catherine Deneuve and Fanny Ardant. And then everything's finished. You know, you've made the film, you've completed the film. Do you ever feel a degree of, oh, I wish we could just make this all over again?
It's the story of movies, you know. You have seen the film by François Truffaut, La Nuit Américaine. When you are on a shooting, the relationship between people are very strong. We are very close during 2 months. One day after the end of the shooting, we don't see each other. During 1 year and 2 years, and when we make a film again, we have still the strong relationships we had the first time. It's the logic of cinema. So when you make your first film, it's quite depressing. But time after time, you learned to deal with that.
She lives in illusion. Emotion is skill.
What are you doing here? Monsieur and I want to be alone tonight. Get out! And this I do not accept.
It's hopeless. She'll never make it.
It's not my fault.
Cut.
No, it's not my fault.
Love, a device. A man may be a girl.
It's an inflatable dummy. It sits on the seat
beside you.
Hey,
what's going on?
And day can serve for night.
The film referenced there by François Ozon, La Nuit Américaine, or Day for Night, is a 1973 comedy by the great filmmaker François Truffaut. Among the questions posed by the film is whether movies are in fact more important than the people who make them. From its opening shot featuring early film stars Dorothy and Lillian Gish, Day for Night turns a love for films and filmmaking into a series of existential questions about the art itself. Still to come, François Ozon reveals the one film that made him see movies in a different way and started his lifelong passion for the art form. This is The Cinema Show. Stay tuned. Many filmmakers can recall the time they first saw a film that resonated with them in a very special way. For director Tim Burton, one of his greatest influences came from an unlikely place. Hollywood's worst ever film director, Ed Wood.
Hi, can I help you?
Yes, I'm Ed Wood. I'm here about directing the Christine Jorgensen picture.
Well, a couple of things have changed. It ain't gonna be the Christine Jorgensen story no more. Goddamn Variety had to print the story before I got the rights. Now that bitch is asking for the sky.
The real Ed Wood made a series of low-budget films throughout the 1950s, mostly in the schlocky science fiction and comedy genres. Tim Burton's 1994 homage is as much a tribute to Ed as it is the art of making bad movies just for the fun of it. And it also features a wonderful Oscar-winning performance by Martin Landau as a fading Bela Lugosi, long after his heyday as the screen's original Dracula.
Pull the string! Pull the string!
In 1963, another great of the French cinema, Jean-Luc Godard, put his own take on the art of filmmaking with what's often considered the most beautiful film ever made, Le Mépris, or Contempt. Much of the film takes place among the crumbling production facilities at Rome's Cinecittà film studios and on the island of Capri in the Bay of Naples. And its legendary status was further confirmed when the famous house featured in the film, Villa Malaparte, was featured on the official poster for last year's Cannes Film Festival. Italian film director Elio Petri spun a dark satire with his 1965 dystopian future set oddity, La Decima Vittima, or The Tenth Victim.
Silence, please! Silence! Hunter or victim?
Victim, ninth hunt.
It's official, all right.
Put the prize money in my account.
This isn't actually a film about the art of filmmaking, but rather a look at how the moving image can be exploited for the most materialistic and violent purposes. Ursula Andress plays a huntress in the midst of a future world sport that sees people hunting each other for prize money. Armed with hidden pistols in her chest piece, she's got her eyes set not only on the cash, but also on the notoriety that will come from performing her kill in front of the cameras. The Tenth Victim is playing right now for movie subscribers right here in the United Kingdom. Catch a whole month of movies for free. Just head over to mubi.com/monocle. That is MUBI/monocle. This is The Cinema Show on Monocle 24. I'm Ben Rylan. François Ozon is a filmmaker of remarkable range, from the larger-than-life comedy of Eight Women to the deep tragedy of Time to Leave in 2005 to the touching character drama of his new film, France. Given the ease at which he seems to dip into any number of genre pools, I wondered, is there any such thing as a comfort zone for François Ozon?
It's your job. Each time I try to experiment something new, to have new challenges, not to repeat myself, and the style of the film comes from the story I want to tell. So each time I try to adapt my way of directing the actors and the mise-en-scène from the story. It comes really from the story. But of course, there are some links between all the films, but some of the links are very unconscious, I think. And I don't want to make this job, you know. I think there are a lot of stories around us, and I have no problem of inspiration, because when you live in a world today, if you open your eyes around you, there are so many stories you can use for films. The desire of what you want to make is the difficult thing. So I'm connected to the world around me, you know, and I try to live like everybody. There are so many stories I could tell. After is, am I sure it's the right story I want to work on during 2 years? That's my problem, to fix my desire. But I need to really finish a film to know exactly what would be the next one. I'm finishing a new film now, and I don't know what will be the next one. Of course, I have some ideas, but I let a big place to my unconscious, you know. You know, when you are dreaming about a story, when you are thinking all the time about a story, you know that's the right story you want to tell. But you have to take time. You know, I don't decide one day I'm going to make that. It takes time, and it's a kind of maturation.
And have you ever, well, I suppose you must have worked on certain projects for a little while, and then you hit a wall and you get to the point where you think, oh, I've devoted considerable time to this, but it's just not going to work.
Yes, very often. Very often, when you have finished a film, you begin to work on a new project, and very often you realize you are telling the same story that you have just finished, and it's not the right story. So you have to mourn this story or to think, maybe I will make it some years after. But very often, I gave up some projects.
I know I've mentioned that you jump into all different kinds of filmmaking. Are there particular areas that François Ozon would never, ever take a step into? I mean, I'm thinking, you know, science fiction epic probably isn't going to be in your immediate future as a filmmaker, but I could be wrong.
Why not? It will be a big challenge, you know, but if I find a right story, and, you know, I would have loved to be a director of the 40s or 50s in Hollywood, you know, able to make a musical, a western, a thriller, a comedy, you know. I'm not afraid of genre, you know. I think very often you can find your freedom in genre, especially, so I don't close the door to anything.
The biggest premiere in Hollywood history for Warner Brothers' A Star Is Born brings out hundreds of film notables, including Danny Thomas and his wife. Movie columnist Hedda Hopper doesn't want to miss this story. And Georgie Jessel, the Toastmaster General, is also attending with the Gary Coopers.
Who are the filmmakers that you turn to?
I love a lot of kind of cinema and the films. I'm very cinephiles. I prefer to go to cinema. I don't like to see movies on television. I prefer to go in a cinema. So I try to see many films. And when I was younger, I was able to see all kind of movies. And actually, I like to see bad movies because as a student who wanted to become a director, it was a kind of work. I was telling me, would I have done it better or not? But now I'm bored with bad movies. So I try to see just good movies. But sometimes, you know, the critics say it's a masterpiece and it's not a masterpiece. And I don't have the patience to see bad movies anymore.
Can you tell me some of your favorite bad movies, or maybe just some bad movies that stick out to you?
There are some guilty pleasures we've got when we are very young. And I try not to watch again these movies I loved when I was a child, because I'm afraid to be disappointed, and I prefer to keep the pleasure I've got when I was young.
I was recently rewatching Valley of the Dolls because, of course, it turns 50 years old this year. Is that the kind of bad movie that we're talking about here?
I've seen Valley of the Dolls when I was an adult, so I knew it was a bad movie. But no, it's more some films like, for example, but I don't know if it's a bad movie, Grease. I was a teenager when I saw Grease, and with John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John, and I don't want to watch again the film because when I saw it, it was like a miracle for me.
What could be Grease Lightning?
Grease Lightning! So we'll get some overhead lifters and four bell quads, oh yeah.
What can people learn from movies, even if they are bad movies, like, as you suggested, Grease, or as I suggested, Valley of the Dolls? Whether it's bad movies like that or, indeed, undisputed masterpieces, what are the things that people can learn from cinema?
What a big question. I think it depends on each one. But for me, you know, I had a very strong experience when I was a child, when I saw a film by Roberto Rossellini called Allemagne alle zéro. Germany, Annie Zero, I don't know what's the title in English. It's a film of the neorealism. And it was a forbidden film for me because I was about 7 or 8 years old. And it was not a film for me. It was a film for adults. But as a young cinephile, I realized cinema could be something else, because at this time I saw just Walt Disney movies or film for children and comedies and very easy movies. And suddenly I saw this film about a young child who tried to survive in the ruins of Berlin after the Second World War. And the film was very strong, very powerful. And at the end of the film, the young child commits suicide. And as a child, I realized cinema could be something else. And it was very strong for me, because I think it's the moment I didn't realize it, but I realized it's at this moment I wanted to become a director, to tell stories, because I discovered the power of cinema as a child.
François Ozon's latest film, France, starring Pierre Ninni and Paula Beer, is out now in cinemas.
That's all for this week. The Cinema Show was mixed and edited by Kieran Matthew Banerjee and researched by Yolene Goffin. Next week, we're at the Cannes Film Festival. I'm Ben Rylan. We'll catch you then.
D'arrêter mon cinéma et de tout partager.